TV Campfire Podcast.
Have you seen it yet? OMG.
We're here.
I hate to sound like a broken record.
Oh, no! We're fans.
It just goes up from there.
Oh! All right, we got to a whole different level.
No, you didn't.
We talk TV.
She is the most useless one-dimensional character ever.
Premiere of Spartacus.
Vengeance.
Welcome to the show.
This is podcast number 108, and I am Libya, your host, and this week we have returning guests.
Peter from West Hollywood.
Ronnie from Vegas.
Tom from Glendale.
And in the news this week, NBC is looking at rebooting The Office, meaning they're going to sort of cancel the season the way it is and then start over from the beginning. Like, I'm not quite sure exactly what that means. But those of us who have watched The Office, such as people not me, what do you guys think?
Let the dog die.
Unless they were doing it like the tone of the show, but it's not a paper company, it's not in Scranton, it's just a different kind of doldrum of The Office, then I'd be like, well, all right, maybe. But I have a weird feeling it's still going to be a paper company, it's still going to be Scranton, there's going to be a Michael Scott, almost like a Spider-Man reboot, you know, like where I'm like, eh. You know, so I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, that sounds like a really bad idea.
And they're already planning a Dwight Schrute spinoff, which is already a bad idea.
Right. Yeah, I heard about that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, is it just going to be his bed and breakfast? Is that what it is?
It's going to be Schrute Farms, the beet farms.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Okay. Yeah, weird.
Right.
Dumb.
Tom, you have news. Go ahead.
A trio of pickups. TNT is circling a Southland pickup. The network wants 10 episodes. The producers want 13. My money's on the network on that one.
I always think that there's more room for more Southland. That's all. Continue.
Yeah, but it's a cost thing.
All right. Continue.
Fox has picked up three comedies, New Girl, Raising Hope, and Glee. I care about Raising Hope. The other two, not so much.
And I like New Girl.
I like Raising Hope, but continue.
I think I read this when in Dumb Magazine, Game of Thrones has been picked up for season 3.
You have the trademark for the name of that magazine?
Oh, sorry. Duh, TM Magazine.
There you go. All right, let's start with the shows. And first up, we're going to talk about Game of Thrones. And continues with the rule of Tyrion, the Hand of the King. He is consolidating power, or he's more like figuring out where that power lies.
He's starting to feel around like, is the eunuch's name Varys?
Yeah, Viserys?
What?
No, wait, that's the brother. Whatever, it begins with a V, yes.
But yeah, he's basically culling through and figuring out, okay, you betrayed Stark, you're out of here.
No, it wasn't him, it wasn't the spider he didn't get rid of. He got rid of the guy that killed all the babies. The guy that went, that was,
yeah, but the guy who killed all the babies also betrayed Ned.
That's true. I thought you were talking about Viserys. Yes. So that's a tip different guy.
No. I'm talking about the guy who killed all the babies.
Right.
He like sends him to the wall. Right. And he's like all shocked and like clean herself, and it's like, yeah, I don't think so.
Well, the thing is that the Lannisters promised him estates and a lordship and all that other stuff, and he took it. And then Tyrion comes behind him and goes, you know what? I'm taking it back and sending you to the wall. That does kind of suck. I actually do feel a little bit bad for the guy because he made a deal, but then again, he killed babies, so not so bad.
Yeah.
I think it's fair that he got what he deserved, you know?
Yeah, and then Dany is out in the desert, and the only problem I have, it's not really a problem, because the thing that's weird is, if you've read the books, they're doing all the same things. Like, the same things are happening, but they're kind of changing the order. And so the whole thing where Daenerys sends out her blood riders in three different directions, and then, you know, one comes back without his head or whatever. Like, that happens, but that happens later. And then when the kid... Oh, when Arya's on the wall, or on the road, and then Gendry figures out that she's a girl, that happens too, but that happens much later. So it's kind of strange to me. But, I mean, they're not changing things. They're just shifting them. So
yeah, I mean, they're adapting, which is what they're supposed to do.
Right, that's true. So anything that sticks out for you?
I like speaking of Arya and the armorers.
Gentry. His name is Gentry.
Gentry.
Okay. Gentry. Yeah, I'm glad that they're like making this alliance and figuring out that for whatever reasons people do not want them alive. So
yes, we should stick together.
You know. But also in this episode we get a like inside look at the Greyjoys.
Right. Go ahead.
Yes. And we get to see like brother and sister.
What is it about these family bonds where
It's a little bit
creepy. Might be my brother, but you don't remember I'm your sister, so I'm going to suck up to you and flirt with you to get some intel.
Well, I mean, she figured it was kind of like, well, I still think it's icky, but her whole thing is she wanted to know what kind of person he was. And because he didn't remember her, she was like, bonus. So, yeah. You know. Peter, you haven't said anything.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's weird how this is like the third or fourth family where it seems like there's some kind of weird incest, like, you know, kind of stuff going on. Even though in this one it's an accident, like he doesn't realize it's his sister, but it's still just like, man, what is with the theme on this show? Like, it seems like this happens a lot, you know? I thought this episode was okay. You know, my fear of this season is, really it's more just because they're based on books, but you know, books tend to have a lot of exposition in the beginning, you know, getting to know these characters and you're putting all these things into place. So, you know, when I rewatched the first season of Game of Thrones, that I liked it a lot more the second time, but the first time, it really wasn't until episode 4 or 5 where I felt like stuff finally kind of started happening. And I'm feeling that way with this one too, where I like the premiere, I like this one a little less, and it's not bad. I'm not like it's bad television. I'm just feeling like the whole, oh, the pieces in place, you know, they're putting their pieces on the board in place and what's going to happen and all these people want to be king. And I'm just kind of like, all right, you know, let's get going, you know.
And the so. Funny thing is I'm just the opposite. I actually like the slow build, you know what I mean? So I like all these pieces slow moving together, and how is it all going to come together, you know?
Before you can go downhill on a roller coaster, you got to do that, take that, climb up.
No. You guys are right. You know, what's weird is that a show like Mad Men, which is one of my favorites, that show usually gets criticized for being too slow. But I guess I feel like in each Mad Men episode, it might start slow, but by the end of the 43 minutes or whatever, they're still taking you on some kind of journey that all this stuff kind of happens. And I think with Game of Thrones, because it is based on a book, it's really more like this serial.
Didn't you learn your lesson from season 1 where it was a slow build and then it was incredible? Like
True. Except that you are right. Except that I have so many friends who read the Game of Thrones books and they all seem to say that the odd ones are the really good ones. So part of me is like, oh man, is 2 not going to be that good? Are we just waiting to get to 3? You know, so I don't know.
Stop listening to these crazy friends. All right, let's move on. We've been on this for a while.
Speaking of Mad Men.
There you go. Nice transition. Go forth and talk.
Can I just say, I really liked how they used some of the real life things that were going on this episode to tie in to what's going on with all these different characters. And it was really, in many respects, kind of a meditation on the changing role of women in the 60s. How, you know, the case where the guy butchered the nurses in Chicago was kind of the preeminent one that kind of freaked everybody out. And the little Sally wants to read the newspaper and step-grandma won't let her. And tells this horrific story how when she was a girl, her dad treated her terribly and would one day just kicked her across the room for no reason. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, no, that was totally creepy. I'm a huge Mad Men fan, and I've never seen a bad episode of Mad Men, but this was an episode where I wasn't quite sure if all their ideas were completely coalescing for me. I thought the stuff with Sally that you're talking about was great. And I also like Peggy ends up having, is her name Dawn, the new receptionist?
Dawn.
So she ends up sleeping at Peggy's house because there's the riots going on and her and her brother are afraid for her to, not Peggy, to Dawn, to get back home. And that's a really kind of nice bonding that kind of unravels into you know, this kind of ugly hiccup of like of Peggy about to going to sleep and about to go to bed, and the purse, her purse is on the table, and you know, she kind of looks at her, and there's this moment of like, ah, oh, terrible, your prejudices, and like that's all great. That's
just
all great.
Blackmailed Roger for like $400 to do work for him on the side.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Right, it's because it's like four. Right, that's true. Right. I forgot about that. That it's like $400, which
in today's dollars, that's like $1,500.
That's true. It is a lot of money. That's true. But like, I liked all that. I guess what was strange to me was, in a weird way, it's almost like Livia tends to think that 30 Rock is better if they stick with Jack and Liz, and that the supporting characters, you know, they can come and go. They can be. This was a weird episode where, in general, if you stick with Don Draper, like, I'm good. Pretty much, if you stick with Don Draper, it's fine. Even Livia, who doesn't love the show, I think, Livia, you admit you like the Don Draper character.
Yeah, he's the only... Well, there's two characters that I like, but he is one of them, yes.
So, in this episode, Don Draper's sick, and he basically has these kind of, like, hallucinations, and it leads to him, like, dreaming about killing this woman from his past, and I mean, I get the metaphor. I get it, like... Of the nurse, the Richard Speck case of, like, you know, the women hiding on the bed and killing the nurse. I get it. It just, I don't know. It was just a little over the top for me. I was like, I don't know if that works, you know. Like, but still, I mean, everything else was great.
I thought they telegraphed pretty easily that it was a dream. It wasn't reality. I'm just glad that Don seems to be on the straight and narrow with respect to his fidelity towards Megan.
Right. And I love his new wife. She's like the anti-Betty. I mean, she's awesome.
Yes, that's why I love her. Now, can I just say that for me, the most emotionally satisfying storyline, though, was the buxom one.
The buxom one?
Joan.
And by the way, I don't know what it is, but this episode, I think she just had a baby in real life, but this is the episode, and maybe it's because I'm watching it in HD. But this episode, I'm looking at her and like, man, she is well endowed. The last scene of the episode goes to Joan. She finds out her awful husband, her awful army doctor husband, volunteered for Vietnam to go back, and she lays him out because in second season he raped her.
Wouldn't she want him to be away in Vietnam versus home?
I think she really wants to hold on to that ideal, though. I think for her, that family unit is really important to her.
The way she lays him out, though, no, the army makes you feel like a good man, but we both know the truth, and you know what I'm talking
about. Right?
I'm like, you go, girl.
All right. So are we we're wrapping? All right.
Yes.
Next up, let's talk about Justified, the season finale. And...
the most disarming episode you'll ever see.
And ding.
Ba-dong-ching.
Yeah.
Hey, Art makes the joke in the episode.
That's true, but that doesn't mean we need to repeat it. So, but I have to say, I mean, I love Mags from last season. I think she's a great villain, and she was really interesting because sometimes you hated her. Sometimes you kind of felt sympathetic for her. But man, this guy, Quarles, was fantastic because you didn't just hate him. I mean, because he gives you his backstory and you find out what happened to him as a kid. You're just like, man, that just totally messed you up.
Yeah, it did.
So I don't feel just like you're just a villain, but he is kind of a villain because there's that moment when he takes the family hostage and he throws the mother out of the car or whatever, and he's just got the boys, and I was like, oh.
This is not good.
This is not good. I was like, this man with two little boys is not good. You know, so I did have that, you know, that fear. I was like, holy crap, you got to save those kids. But he's still a fantastic villain. Like, he knocked it out of the park. So.
And not only that, the shades that Neil McDonald gave to the character, because when he calls up Theo Tonin and says, I want to come home, Theo. It's just like, dude, seriously? How old are you? I want to come home.
Yeah, but he sold it, though, right?
$100 million.
He sold it, though, right? I mean, I believed him.
Man, just pathetic. I think my favorite image is after Because you know that Limehouse, with all those cleavers around, you knew somebody was going to get the wrong end of that. And when Limehouse chops off Quarles' arm, and then Raylan and Quarles reaches for it, and Raylan pulls it back. How pathetic can you be?
That was amazing.
Oh, because, I mean, I think that's instinct. You know, I think that was instinct. He was in shock. He wasn't feeling the pain yet. So, I totally thought that made sense. And he was like, wow.
But Raylan pulling it, or pulling back from, you know, pulling the arm back from him was just, like, perfect, you know? Yeah, after everything that the animosity between the two of them.
Yeah. Peter, go ahead. You had a comment.
No, I think season three was really good. I personally, I think I was more a little more emotionally invested looking back on it on season two. But yes, Neil McDonough was fantastic, and you were just talking about the disarming thing. I love when we find out where Limehouse hides the money.
The big bank.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Ronnie, did you have a
so? Yeah, really good season, and also just so sad, you know, that is Arlo the dad?
Oh, right. Yes.
You know that all Arlo saw was a man with a hat and a gun about to shoot Boyd. You know, and it's just like, and of course he realized, you know, and then thinking, oh my God, he would have killed his own son, Raylan. You know, like that was pretty good. Like I thought
that was
really good.
Why he was surprised to see Raylan.
Right. Oh.
Yeah. Yes.
When you put all that together, that broke my heart. It really did. I don't know why I was
surprised. That broke my heart, too. I would agree.
Yeah. I don't know why I was surprised. But Ronnie, go ahead.
And I was going to say, I mean, because you know that, I mean, the animosity between Raylan and his father, but you know how loyal he is to him. And so for it to come up in this way where, you know, sort of his dad thought he was, you know, where his dad goes more to
Boyd.
Yeah, to Boyd rather than, you know, to Raylan. It just, it's bittersweet.
Yeah, no sweetness to that. It was just bitter.
No sweetness, just bitter.
Yeah, it was just pretty bitter.
He just basically throwing in his face as he's going to jail that Boyd's my son. You know, biology aside, you know, I don't really have any connection to you.
Right. Oh, anyway. Okay.
But of course, Arlo is, you know, sort of losing it anyway, so.
That's true.
Helen told me.
Johnny. Big betrayal with Johnny. I'm waiting for that to come back.
You know that's going to figure into season four somehow.
Yes, yes. Johnny is not loyal, and Johnny actually hates Boyd. Who knew? All right, so wrapping that up, thumbs up. Really good season to justify it.
How about severed arm up?
Oh, come on.
Mom, you're not going to let that go, are you?
Nope. All right, so now we're with the season finale of Psych. And this week was pretty good. I mean, it was good all the way up to the end. But not talking about the end. The episode itself was based on the premise that there were corrupt cops in Santa Barbara. And it all came down to they found two murdered bodies in the same spot. But that's even regardless of the case, because usually the case doesn't matter.
Right.
But this time it kind of did because it had to do with the dad's old cases. It was his old case, and so he comes on to it. But I think they got their rhythm back a little bit because the guys being goofy is always fun to watch. But I don't know. I think part of the problem is now that Sean's with Juliet, the rhythm is a little off. You think?
It changes the dynamic, you know, somewhat. You know, it still can work, but they've got to watch, you know, sort of the balance with everything.
And I don't know if they've gotten that balance right. I think that's part of the problem with this season is that...
Go ahead. I just think the whole season's been off. I mean, Psych used to be one of my favorite shows to watch, and now it's like,
you gotta watch Psych.
It's like the guys having fun, and by the guys having fun, the actors having fun is not enough to sustain the show.
True, and not for a whole hour. Unless you have Lassiter tap dancing, in which case I'm highly amused.
you're amused whenever they give Lassie something fun to do.
Yes.
I think you were saying how, like, the more you see Lassiter, you can tell how good an episode is depending on how much he shows up in the episode.
Yes, the ratio of Lassiter to the episode, it lets you know the quality. And this week's episode was very light on the Lassie. But the problem, I think, really stems from the whole episode was kind of fun and goofy and everything, and then they end on a cliffhanger where the dad gets shot in the chest. And I'm like, really?
That's like, not fun.
Well, I mean, it's like they forgot what show they were on. And it's kind of strange.
This isn't The Mentalist.
So it's kind of strange when you have a show that's pretty much just a comedy, and then you throw that in. It's just like, eh. Like, I didn't feel any tension. I didn't feel whatever they were the writers were trying to get me to feel. I did not feel it at the end. Like, no.
And the only thing is, I mean, because the one thing that they did build it up is that, you know, because, you know, it was the dad's friend, you know, because there were four cops who did everything together and then retired. And so his whole disillusionment as he found that they were involved in the murder and everything else. But at the same time, it's Psych. Now, I haven't watched all the seasons of Psych, so I watched like the last two. So I've come onto it a little bit later. But still, I watch Psych, I just want to have fun and not, you know, sort of have to worry about anything. So it is weird to end it on such a serious note and to take the show in a different direction.
Right. But then they've done a couple of serious episodes before. And whenever
the yin-yang thing.
Yeah, they were bad. Just like, they just don't do it well. And I just really think they should not even try. Just that is not the show.
Which is interesting because Castle's a show that has a similar tone to Psych. But when they do serious episodes, they do them well.
Right. And I think part of it is actually Nathan Fillion, is that he can pull off the comedy and the seriousness. I don't think these guys... Well, Dulé Hill can do serious, because I've seen him do serious.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't know if the lead... What's his name?
James Rodet.
Yeah, I don't know if he can, because I don't buy it. Like, when he's super serious, it's just... I can't decide if it's the writers or the actors. I really don't know.
I would blame the writers first, because I've seen him do some serious stuff before. I think part of the problem, though, is Sean's character is so light and flippant about everything, right. Whereas Castle knows there's a time to be flippant and a time to be serious.
That's true.
Good point.
Anyway, all right, so wrapping that up, I'd give this season of Psych a thumbs down, actually.
Ooh.
Me too.
Yeah.
I say sideways. Well, about half and half of the episodes. Yeah, this has not been a great season for Psych.
Yeah, and if you've only seen the last two seasons, please go back and watch from the beginning. It was actually really good.
It was great.
So, all right. Next up, let's talk about Modern Family. I like that it just makes you laugh just saying the name of the show.
They just love putting these... poor Claire. They delight in torturing these characters.
That's true, yes.
The long-awaited election for city council.
Oh, right. The only thing is, I have a problem with the physical comedy of the tooth. The tooth bothers me.
No, I agree. The tooth thing didn't really work for me either. Sometimes, like, the guy who plays Phil, I think, is really good with, like, physical comedy, but that's not really Claire, the actress... Julie Bowden. I'm not really sure if that's her thing. So, yeah, the tooth thing didn't really work for me.
Yeah, I agree. Tom, go ahead.
It seemed too out there. I mean, you know, you can be real and then you can be at the top and you can be over the top. And
right.
That was just a little bit too much.
Yeah.
I
love the daughter, though. I got on the waiting list.
Yeah, that was like, she gets all these fails. And her getting on the waiting list is enough for the entire family to cheer and celebrate.
And that felt in the spirit of the show, is that, like, a lot of times, even when they're losers, they're still a family. So, actually, I agree. I thought that was funny, and I liked that. That was good.
I'm surprised nobody brought up the thing with the thinner the letter is, you know, and acceptance packets are thicker than rejection letters.
They always forget that on television shows.
And
like,
I
they want to make
that.
It a mystery.
Like, come on, seriously?
Yeah.
I just feel like you're right, they didn't in this episode, but I always feel like, I mean, okay, maybe not television shows, but in movies, I actually feel like they always do that. They're always like, oh, if it's thin, that means it's a rejection.
No.
So I didn't mind they didn't bring it up. I almost thought that was kind of a cliche, so I was like, it's fine.
And then Cam and Mitchell on their power hungry mission with the megaphone.
Well, they end up like they're driving by like supercuts. They're like, you will not look like the pictures. They don't do the pictures, the haircuts or whatever, right? Like the photos.
But they were just telling people to do stuff, and they're like, we have the power. And then their whole, though it ended on kind of a stupid note with them revealing somebody was gay to this woman, and I was like, nah, whatever. That didn't really work, but the rest of it I thought was pretty good.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, that was all right.
Yeah.
That was great.
And then Jay and the woman at the voting booth, that was strange.
Yeah, that really was like, what show is this?
That was weird. And it didn't go anywhere.
Yeah, it was just, it seemed like, we gotta have something for the third family unit. We'll throw in something with Jay.
And then they left it at that. All right, so Modern Family, for the most part, was pretty good. It wasn't their best episode, but it was still Modern Family, so I laughed anyway. All right.
One and two-thirds thumbs up.
All right. Let's not get too complicated. All right, next up, don't trust the bee in apartment 23. Peter is the advocate. Go forth and discuss.
Well, I'm not saying it's the best thing ever, but I thought the promo was terrible, and I was like, oh my god, this looks awful. But when I watched the show, I was like, oh, okay, the promo makes it look like, so the whole show is Kristen Ritter is this awful person, and this blonde girl, this innocent blonde girl, lives with her, and isn't it funny how terrible she is? And I was like, well, why wouldn't she just move out? I mean, that's what I'm thinking when I'm seeing the promo. But in the show, it's like, okay, well, it's not quite that. It's like, it's more that she's using this, she's evil to a certain degree. She hypes up her evil to a certain extent, because basically what she's doing, it's a scam so that she can basically have some woman moves in, does first and last month's rent, and then she's awful and she gets to keep the money. And I was like, okay, well, which still is bad behavior. But really, the whole sleeping with your fiance on your birthday cake, that was really, which is part of the episode and it was in the promos, that's really more about like being a good thing, because actually it's a good thing that the girl, the blonde...
To be clear, she wasn't trying to do a good thing. That was not the intent.
Yes, she was.
Was she?
That's the point, is that she finds out what's going on, and she's like, you know, I don't think you should blank him, you know, with him, and then that's why she does all that. That's the whole point.
I must have missed that.
So it's not exactly what we're thinking.
Okay, well, because...
I will say that on iTunes, they had debuted the first two episodes. I liked the second episode way more, especially because the guy from Better Off Ted is in it, the main character. So I didn't love the pilot, but, it, you know, I'm a big sitcom guy. So, I mean, I'm still watching Two Broke Girls. So, yeah. I mean, like...
You are? Yeah. Do we need to have an intervention for you?
The good thing about the show that they did leave out of the promos is that the blonde girl is not super innocent. She actually fights back. And I like the fact that she fought back.
I do like that, yes. Right, because she sells all her stuff, right? Right.
So I was like, all right, she's not a pushover. So that kind of works.
How is Vanderbilt?
Yes, I agree. And I'm not saying it's a great show. I was just like, oh, okay. You know, I liked it enough. I watched the next episode.
Vanderbeek is not as good. Evil Vanderbeek is not as good as Evil Will Wheaton. Evil Will Wheaton is much cooler. He's more of a douchebag Vanderbeek more than Evil Vanderbeek.
Right, which I'm sure is intentional. For me, it was more that it made me realize that, like, you know, there were four actors from Dawson's Creek. Joshua Jackson and Michelle Williams have gone on, I think, pretty successfully. I think that they're pretty good. And then you have Katie Holmes and Vanderbeek, which I feel like are a lot more inconsistent. And I find the idea of Vanderbeek playing himself, but I'm not quite – I'm like, eh, that's okay.
Wrapping that up, next up, we're going to talk about Community. And
funny
this
episode.
This was the one.
Really good episode. Yeah, yeah, really good. Best one since they returned, I think.
Britta and Blade.
Ah, Blade.
Blade, right?
And they had a Blade marathon.
Really terrible friends. You keep saying that name.
They're trying to watch the movie. That was so great. They were like, do you now feel like watching Blade? Yes, let's watch Blade tonight. Oh, and then I like the, what is it, the principal? What is he, the dean? He's like, the dean just showed up.
What are you doing here?
Yes.
Ouch.
Dean is just randomly at their house. It's so crazy.
But the brilliance of that gag is everybody asks him the same question, and he feigns injury, but never tells them.
Right. He's like, I'm just here. Don't worry about it. But then, oh, and the whole Britta thing with liking the abuse. And did you get that feeling about Britta before this episode? Like, did you feel like that was the kind of character she was?
Well, she does always kind of like bad boys. That is kind of her thing. I mean, they always make jokes. Like, I mean, they've made jokes about that before.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think it's in her character.
All right, well.
I just thought Jeff's obsession to find out Blade's secret.
right.
As long as they now make him take his... Now that I know it's under his shirt, they must now make him take his shirt off every episode.
Wait, I was just thinking, because Wait, maybe I forget. What was Shirley doing in this episode?
She was with Jeff up until Jeff went off with his obsession, and then she left.
She was with Jeff at the carnival.
She was pretending to be the girlfriend he was winning the animals for.
Right. No, you're right. You're right, 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 right. Totally.
All right. So Community was actually... Oh, and then the last scene, of course, we have to mention, which is after everything is over... Britta finds out that they've been the ones sending the text, and that really nice message was actually from Troy. And so she has this moment where she's thinking about it, and they do this whole exchange of looks. So it's like Britta looking at Troy, Annie looking at Jeff, and then Troy looking at Abed. And I was like, all right, I like their triangle. It's or whatever that shape is at that point. I really do. I like it. Community, that is the group for me, except strangely now Shirley's not in. That group plus Shirley is the group. I think that's awesome. And I do agree that Chevy Chase, I didn't miss him at all. Like,
yeah. And if he's not on the show next year, it'll be stronger.
Yeah, I agree. Wow. All right, so wrapping up, let's talk about Awake. And Ronnie, you haven't talked in a while. What do you think?
Interesting episode, but the funny thing is, like, as we go further along in the season, I get more and more mixed up about the cases which world he's in with the different cases. Because this one, and with, you know, one, it was looking back at the warehouse.
It has to do with the case that he was doing right before he got in his accident.
Right. It has some kind of tie-in that we don't know yet to the accident.
Right. And then he's also hallucinating more now. With the whole, he goes to the taco thing to order a taco.
This is like Ricky's
Taco. The drive-in restaurant.
Yeah, and then the drive-in thing starts telling him to go to the warehouse, and he's just like, what? So, I mean, last week we had the penguin talking to him, and this week we have the big taco head talking to him. So, there's obviously something.
Like everybody is eating these Ricky tacos as well, you know, which is also kind of interesting.
Oh, right, because everywhere he went, everybody was eating the tacos. Cause it was
like
all
his partner was. And
right, it's all like all these details.
Was the rapper at the warehouse?
Yeah, there was a rapper at the warehouse. Like all that stuff is kind of all wrapping up together, and he doesn't know what it means, but obviously it means something. But at this point, I'm afraid to speculate what any of it means, because right now it's just like a whole bunch of information kind of just thrown up against the wall. So
you know, Entertainment Weekly did a really interesting article in the current issue saying that all these shows that have these big arc storylines, because of the nature of TV, they can't advance them. You know, like I'm missing, they can't find the kid because then the show's over. But the problem with this show, and my patience is starting to wear thin, the individual cases from week to week are so wafer thin and easy to, you know, you knew the dad was probably abusing the daughter.
Right, you knew that pretty early, but it's not like, about the cases. It's really isn't. It's about all the details that come together and how he uses his abilities to go between universes to solve this stuff. That's really what it's about.
But it's kind of getting in a rut. We're not getting enough new information, and it feels like we're not quite treading water, but we're not really moving forward either.
I would disagree with you in these last two episodes. I think the last two episodes have been moving forward in the fact that his brain is now working differently. Like everything is going haywire.
Well, that's because he's not sleeping.
Right. And so that's actually moving. I think something's going to have to give. Like all that's kind of coming together.
I think part of it is I don't trust NBC.
That they're going to cancel it anyway, right? That's true.
Yeah, because I hate when you get involved with the show and it gets the rug pulled out from under them. But I still think they need to give us a little bit more because, I mean, the most we get is we get Laura Innes looking like she's still on the event, planning no good.
That's true. That's so weird. She is playing. She's not playing the same character at all, but it's kind of strange.
It feels like the same character.
Yeah, it is kind of strange. Really does. All right. You had something, Ronnie? Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say, we don't get enough of that. They just sprinkle it in what was like 3 or 4 episodes ago, and now you get another sprinkling of that. And so, to delve a little bit more into what's really going on, I think would be better. I actually enjoyed last week's better because I liked it when he started getting his facts mixed up in each world.
Oh, right.
They showed him breaking, you know, sort of things breaking down where they didn't show, you know, sort of anything along those lines this time. But still, I find it interesting. Like I said, I just for me trying to keep straight which world we're in and which partner, you know, he's with.
Oh,
with,
it's,
and which world.
It's color-coded. It's, you know, Rex world is desaturated with the black partner, and Hannah world has, is
yellow.
Is burnished color with
the Hispanic guy. Yeah.
With Fez from That 70s Show.
Yeah, that's kind of
where he's from.
Yeah, you could tell. Yeah. They tell you by the color, the saturation of the film. So
it's the saturation and also the band on his left arm.
Right, but I never remember which.
And I still think that, boy, it just feels that everything's focused toward the son over the wife.
Well, in the last couple weeks, we haven't seen the son hardly at all, actually.
But still, it feels like. When we're in Hannah world, it's about the son being dead. And when we're in Rex world, it's about him trying to bond with the son. And Hannah seems almost an afterthought even when she's there.
Well, I'm not arguing. I think she's not interesting either. So that's all fine. So.
I like the actress, but I don't think they're writing her well at all.
I don't
it's
like
the one note.
I think the most interesting thing about her world is him moving to Portland. And what's that going to do to his realities when he's not in the same city?
Right. And is he going to run into the Grimms?
Oh, good Lord. All right. Oh, that's my cue. That's my cue to move on to the next show. All right. So next up, we have Scandal. And I know this is the second episode of Scandal, but everyone is actually only caught up to the pilot. So I talked about the pilot last week, but by myself. So this week, everyone has actually seen it and shall give their opinions therein.
Oh, yes, we will.
Okay.
We might have a gender.
Peter, you go first.
Oh, good Lord. All right, go for it.
Well, you know, part of this is an expectation thing. Libby had told me how much she really liked the opening. She had said, oh, my God, you know, it's kind of like Aaron Sorkin type dialogue. It's just these people talking. And I love that kind of stuff. And I was like, all right. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to check
well
this out.
Done.
You know, like, right. And so then I see the opening scene and they're talking super fast and everything. And I'm kind of like, this isn't necessarily terrible. And then if anybody has seen any Sandra Rhimes show, Grey's Anatomy, Private Practice, she has this real tendency like to not trust her audience and punctuate everything with goofy music. It's what I call goofy music syndrome. And man, nuts on this. And so like the scene that Libby is talking about, the opening, actually would not be terrible. It would have been okay, but man, the music, it just drove me crazy. It's too accentuating everything. So then I'm like, all right, I'm not liking this, but okay, I'm gonna finish this, you know. And I just it just didn't work for me. And in fact, I gotta say, it sounds like, interestingly, we've got two women and two men here, and it sounds like we're going to be guys versus girls, but I got to say, one of my biggest problems with the show was that, you know, as I consider myself a male, you know, feminist of sorts, I think that the Kerry Washington character is unbelievably frustrating as showcasing a strong woman because, you know, Sandra Rhimes has done this before with Christina. She's very determined, really smart, you know, really cares about the job. That's all great. And in this show, you've got that, and then at the end, or near the end, she completely buckles under the charm of, you know, Tony Goldwyn, who is supposed to be the president of the United States. And, I mean, I gotta say, man, no, I'm not a woman, but I found that really insulting.
They insinuated it wasn't like that was the first time he ever kissed her. They've been in a relationship for years.
I'm going to read the text messages I was sending to Libya as I'm watching this. Not digging Scandal so far. Shonda's trying to channel Sorkin's banter. Plus, the pacing's kind of off. It doesn't feel organic. The rest of the show isn't similarly paced.
You know, your text don't make sense because I responded.
Yeah. Hate the gay subplot. So 1990s. Shame on you, Shonda.
Oh, I hate the gay subplot. Ugh.
I will agree with you.
You should have had me watch episode 2 instead of the pilot. Like the president is going to mac on someone in the Oval Office? Please. Nice bead of drool from his lip to hers, though.
I did say I agreed with you on the gay subplot because that was ridiculous.
I'm sorry. That scene did not play as hot to me. It played as creepy because he's almost forcing himself on her.
It did not play as creepy at all. No.
Oh, I disagree. I disagree.
All right, Ronnie, go ahead.
Wow. So much emotion. Wow. Good, you know, if nothing else. Because actually, I enjoyed it. You know what I mean? I didn't have, because the fact that, like, say, in the Oval Office, it was in some senses a little bit creepy because he did try to, you know, do the, you know, sort of power play on her, but she came out from under it. And the fact that she, you know, sort of, you know, she used to work there, you know, and help him get elected, and now she's off on her own. So to me, it shows her strength. Yet at the same time, I like it in the pilot episode because it starts to give the backstory about sort of who she is and that, you know, she is strong, but yet also vulnerable. So to see both sides of that.
And they also talked about the fact that everybody was wondering why she left the White House. It was like, everyone's like, well, that's kind of strange that you left the White House. And now we understand why.
I didn't buy that his chief of staff, played by, I think the actor's name is Jeff Bennett. He did an arc on Grey's as Meredith's dad.
Oh,
I didn't believe that he didn't know about their fling. It's like, seriously? Leo McGarrity would have known.
Well, hopefully they were a little more discreet before, because as you pointed out, this was not discreet at all.
No. Hey, let's just make sure the TV camera's not catching us.
Yeah, as you stand by a big window, right.
Hey, I see the president macking on some black woman.
Yeah, I agree. That was not the most prudent thing. But yeah, the scene worked for me, and especially, well, also you haven't seen the second episode, but the second episode they actually have more of a conversation. But what I find is interesting is, in the first episode, I'm assuming that every word he's saying to her, he's lying. But then when you get to the second one, I felt like I wasn't sure what he was lying about. Like, maybe he's lying about this, maybe he's not. So, yeah, he didn't give creepy to me. I actually think their relationship is really interesting. So
I think they would have been better served. I think the actual, well, aside from the gay subplot, I thought the story wasn't bad. I thought the execution of the story was awful.
I think it's a pilot, too. So, you know, I give a pilot a little more play. But
right, because it's just setting up the characters. I like the team and sort of like realizing right. Like they're coming together. You know, each of them have different issues. You know, and she's working on, you know, sort of helping them as well.
I don't know how much I care about these kind of shows. And I think House of Lies is in the same category, where you have a bunch of characters that are specialists, perhaps they're lawyers, perhaps they're marketing execs, and they're this kind of consulting, this special branch that's so genius, and they live this great lifestyle. I don't know how much I like that as a show, like, because I didn't like House of Lies, and I don't really like this, so I think the format for me doesn't really work.
Well, except that they're not living glamorous lives. Those guys are working, like, 20 hours a day. They're not glamorous.
I don't think they're... I mean, they're not working at McDonald's. I mean,
For House of Lies, it was all about the glamour and the bling. This show's not about that at all. It's very much showing that these guys aren't getting sleep. They're working. They're sacrificing everything for the job. It's not about the money.
I'll give you that they're working a lot, but I don't know. Their office is pretty swanky. That wooden table is awesome. I mean, like, they got a pretty place.
I put all the pictures up on that wall. But you know what? It kind of reminded me, this is kind of weird because it's a very different type of show in some ways, but it reminded me a little bit of Alphas because you have all these people that are misfit in different ways coming together to work together because they all have like their specialties. Like the one woman, she can, you know, she knows she's really connected, so she can get information from all these different people. So it was interesting watching these different, you know, sort of the different characters find their niche to help put the story together.
All right.
I think a fundamental problem of shows like this is what the characters are doing is kind of inherently morally questionable.
Oh, that's true. She does say that she only takes cases if she thinks the person's innocent.
Correct,
did say that.
But because she thinks the president is not lying to her, she totally, totally messes over this.
Oh, woman. Yeah, that's true. She destroyed her. That's true.
She destroys this woman, and she even tells her, you know, Monica Lewinsky was telling the truth, and look how that turned out.
That's true. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have to say though, that was still an awesome scene. It was bad, but it was still. I thought it was awesome to watch.
Right. But again, I think it also shows, like, in a sense, sort of the limits of her power, because, yes, she has the power, but she's got to sort of watch it. And so it's a good cautionary tale to set up, okay, I let it get, sort of too far, this one incident. I can't be quite as, I'm not as invincible as I thought.
Yeah, that's true, too. All right, let's wrap this up. We've been on this for way too long. All right, next up, I want to talk about Magic City, and I know I'm probably the only person who saw the second episode, but I just want to reiterate that when I watched the first episode and I talked about it last week, I hadn't seen Boardwalk Empire. And then...
Ain't nothing like the real thing.
I know! So I watched the first episode. I was like, oh, this is not bad. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's great. I thought the story was okay. You know, the son's like, all right. Then I watched season one of Boardwalk Empire. I literally finished the finale of season one. And then the very next thing I watched was the second episode of Magic City. And I was like, huh. This is a really bad imitation of Boardwalk Empire. And Jeffrey Dean Morgan is fantastic. But it feels like it's just not written as well. It's not, and the moral of the story is not that Magic City is bad. The moral of the story is you can't watch them back to back. That's really what the moral of the story is. So, Boardwalk Empire is not playing right now. So go ahead and watch Magic City. That's all I got.
Magic City. It's not Boardwalk Empire, but their new season doesn't come on for several months.
Exactly. That's exactly the plug I want to give it.
There you go.
All right, next up, we're going to talk about In Plain Sight.
Woo! So good to have Mary Sarcasm back, let me tell you.
Yeah, and now I have to say, I mean, this isn't the first episode back. This is probably, the third? Something like that?
Yes.
And it's weird because you could tell it's a series finale because they're bringing back, everyone. Everybody who's ever been on the show are making appearances. And so her old boyfriend from season two or three comes back and he's married, and then the case is with the transvestite guy.
Right.
Who talks about
the drag queen, yes.
And he keeps attributing all his good qualities to his drag queen character. And Marshall has this nice moment where he says, "No, those characters are yours." And I was like, "Thank you, Jiminy Cricket." That was a little soapy. But I mean, I like the episode. Don't get me wrong. Ryan?
Yes. And I did too. I just enjoyed it. I mean, seeing Marshall in drag was fantastic.
Marshall was in drag?
Yes.
Yes.
That's scary.
It was. You said that Marshall was a pretty transvestite, and that is not true.
Oh, come on.
He looks like a guy.
Look at his cheekbones. Come on.
He did have nice cheekbones, but he still really looked like a guy.
But he's in drag. It's like the in-between, you know?
He didn't really look in-between. He just looked like a guy wearing a wig and some makeup. But he did sing all right. He looked better. He looked better than The Witness looked in drag. That's definitely true.
That's for sure, yes.
But
also in this episode, it's interesting because you get the angst with Mary because in the last episode was when Marshall actually got engaged to his girlfriend. But right. He didn't tell Mary beforehand. And so in this episode, he finally has to, tell her and come out with it. And he's trying to do it in a very nice way. It's like, hey, let's go to lunch. And she goes, you never go to lunch with me like that. What's going on? And he tells her, and you could tell that she's, that she just doesn't like this.
Not at all. Yeah.
No.
But the question is she jealous because she wants Marshall to herself? Or is she jealous because she feels like they're best friends and they're not going to be best friends anymore?
I think a little of both.
Yes.
You say yes is the answer. Because I've always wanted Marshall and Mary to finally actually end up together at the end, but I don't see that happening at this point.
There's too many other things going on.
Right. And they've given no indication that Marshall doesn't love his fiance. So, and he would be smart actually not to be with Mary because Mary has crazy intimacy issues. So
right.
There is that.
Right. You know what I mean? You see that in this episode because, the baby dad hits on her and because all these men are coming back into her life, so she ends up sleeping with him,
Right, to avoid all the other guys in her life, right.
Right. And so Mary, yeah, she's emotionally unstable. So we see at the end, the whole, you know, one of the reasons for it, we get a visit from her dad.
Awesome casting. You didn't tell me who was cast as her father. That was fantastic.
No, you know.
How would I know that? That was great.
It's been out there.
I don't pay attention. But basically, it's...
Who's playing her dad?
I was just about to say. He was most recently from Terra Nova. Yes, and from Avatar, he was
Colonel Taylor.
Yes,
Stephen Lang.
Wow.
Yeah, and he's I love that actor. So that.
But didn't he look older in this? I guess your dad.
Well, no. Well, the difference is he had no scars. Like everything he's been on so far, they've given him crazy scars. So, and I think he was dyeing his hair a little bit, but he didn't dye it for this. It's just all gray. But
see,
I mean.
Wanted to make him look older as her dad anyway, you know?
Right. But, I mean, he was fine. And you're right, Mary's reaction, like, you know, you don't know what she's going to do. Because she looks like she's about to fall into a big ball and cry. And she's like, nope, you're under arrest. and the preview for next week looks great. So it's all about him. And I was like, yay, that'll be good. I can't wait. So thumbs up in plain sight. Thought it was great. Marshall should never ever wear drag again.
I think he's. I think he should.
Note to Frederick Weller.
All right. Next up, we want to talk about Fairly Legal for a second, because Tom, you had some comments you wanted to make, and I think, are you watching it?
No, I watched the first episode of the new season, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done. They took a marginal show and made it worse by adding one of the most obnoxious carriers.
Carriers of a virus?
Yeah, basically. But this character is like the reject from a David E. Kelly show.
He's bad. Like he's so just, bad that when I watch the trailers, I'm just like, no, not even.
And then I watched the first episode, and I'm like, yeah, I'm done. And I know the actress who plays the stepmother. And I'm sorry. I'll call her and tell her. It's like, you know, you're great, but this show is not.
Oh, shoot.
Peter, did you watch any of the new Fairly Legal?
No, I saw the trailer. And I thought it looked pretty lame. And I'm a big fan of that actress.
She's being squandered. I like Sarah Shahi, but I do not like her character in this show.
Yeah, I agree. I would agree, yeah. So we are not going to be covering Fairly Legal on this podcast. All right, so next up is Fringe.
Woo!
So this was the episode...
The Consultant.
That's what it was called. It was called The Consultant, who was Walter. And Walter was the consultant in this episode. And he actually got to travel to the other side, which he... I think this was his first time doing it, right? Well, no, technically...
I think so, yeah.
Well, I mean, technically, he's the one who opened in the first place and went and stole Peter.
Well,
so
that's true. Right.
So, yeah, not his first time. So, this would be his second.
I thought it was good. I thought it was a good episode. And, you know, interesting... I thought it had some nice moments with the Folivia missing her partner... And Walter ends up staying in her place, and there's some moment where he's in like her bathrobe or something, and she's kind of
in like a kimono.
And it's kind of a funny scene, but it's also kind of like you kind of feel bad for her, and it's a nice moment. It's like it proved to me like that it made me go, yeah, you know what's been going on with this season is that like you know originally. The whole thing was that the alternate universe was kind of a bunch of jerks, you know, like the Walternate. And even Folivia, they just seem so dead set on, like, shoot first, ask questions later. And now we've seen that, you know, pretty much everybody on the other side, we can kind of sympathize and understand them and stuff, which is kind of nice. You know, and especially, obviously, you know, Broyles, who I had forgotten about his whole thing about the sun. Did he go blind originally? Was that what it was?
I don't remember, but he was sick. I do remember that, but I don't remember what.
He was sick. Right, yeah. But yeah, no, I thought, yeah, good. And then I'm very much looking forward to next week. But yeah, no, I thought...
Oh, because next week is time travel and observers.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so, and I don't want to talk too much about the preview, even though I finished watching the episode, and I was like, holy crap, this is great. And then I saw the preview, and I was like, wow, that looks even better, which doesn't always happen.
So you would have watched it right away.
Absolutely. Though I did, for some reason, I felt like they broke the fourth wall on me with the very last scene where I could, it's like I felt I heard the director yell action. Like when Peter and Olivia come running into the lab and they're like, Walter, you had something to tell us. And I was like, really? Like, nobody enters a lab like that. That was just weird. But other than that, I thought the episode was really good. And Lincoln staying on the other side was great. And Broyles making the right decision, because he had that great conversation with Walter where he's like, you know, when the choice was yours and you could save the universe or save your son, you know, what would you do? And would you do it all over again? And he was like, well, before, no. He said, but now, yes. Bryce is like, great, thank you. You suck. But it was, yeah, I liked it. Thumbs up. Done.
I thought the one thing that kind of read false for me is that when Bolivia is looking for suspects for who could be the mole, and then Walter just completely out of the blue, what about Director Broyles? It's like, come on.
Well, it was the fact that she wasn't even considering him and wasn't even on her list, and he was like, you have to consider everyone.
It just seemed, that whole exchange seemed a little bit too easy. It would have been better if they had gone down through a couple of names first, and then he said, well, what about him?
About
him?
Yeah, that's true.
I did love the scene, however, when Bolivia plays Nina.
Yeah. She's like, we have caught Broyles.
And Nina doesn't even know she's been, evil Nina doesn't even know she's been played.
Yeah, that was a good poker move. I liked it. Okay, so wrapping up, I believe that is it. So that's all we have for this week's podcast. If you have any feedback, send it to tvcampfire@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook. GetThePointRadio.com, Krypton Radio. What am I forgetting? That would be Weedonopolis and Stitcher.com. And we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Later.